Il-program li ser tisimaw huwa miġjub lilkom biex xewqat tajba ta' rappreżentanza tal-Kummissjoni Ewropea f'Malta. Campus FM jippreżenta Il-Balomba, program li jagħti ħarsa lejn l-aħħar żviluppi relatati mal-istituzzjonijiet Ewropej. Produzzjoni u prezentazzjoni Jasmine Saliba.
Rodwa tajba jena Jasmine Saliba nsemmilkom nilqagħkom għal edizzjoni oħra tal-programm Il-Balomba. Programm tellam ir-rappreżentanza tal-Kummissjoni Ewropea f'Malta u li fih nagħtu ħarsa lejn aħbarijiet u ġrajiet li jkunu jseħħew madwarna fil-kuntest ovvjament ta' dak li jkunu qegħdin jiġu preżentati anke l-perspettiva tal-Kummissjoni Ewropea. Kummissjoni Ewropea li kienet mistiedna fost il-kapijiet ta' stati tal-ikbar seba' pajjiżi madwar id-dinja fis-summit tal-G7, summit li kien qiegħed jitkellem dwar numru ta' sitwazzjonijiet, numru ta' issues, relazzjonijiet maċ-Ċina, sitwazzjoni tal-pandemija, il-vaċinazzjoni fuq livell globali u anke il-relazzjonijiet bejn ir-Renju Unit u l-istess Unjoni Ewropea li kienet tema ta' uħut mil-qad bilaterali f-summit li propju sar ġewwa l-Ingilterra. Fil-kuntest ta' dan ser nisimgħu l-ewwel parti ta' dan il-programm diskors li għamlet il-President tal-Kummissjoni Ewropea, Ursula von der Leyen, li għilet propju il-bidu ta' dan il-summit li kifedna seħ fil-Kroma ġewwa l-Ingilterra.
We have a very broad agenda. These 3 days are really packed. So I want to focus on some of the topics, the economic impact of the crisis. We'll look at that. We will, of course, also look at the international environment, the rules-based system. We'll look at the education, the global education status, health, of course, and climate. So on the economy, at the beginning, we will discuss as G7 how the state of play is and how we view the progress in our economies and what the best approach could be. And we haven't forgotten, you all remember a year ago, how threatening this health crisis was and still is for our economies. I mean, it had the potential to turn into a massive economic crisis. Interestingly, if we look at the European Union, we tackled the economic fallout from the pandemic, from this crisis, much better than, for example, compared to the last big crisis, the financial crisis in 2008. And why was this the case? It was the case because the European Union, after the last big crisis, drew the necessary conclusions from this crisis and developed effective tools. So when this pandemic and this economic crisis hit, we were able to establish very fast a diagnosis of the economic fallout. We came very fast to a consensus on the necessary remedial action, and then we could act forcefully on all fronts. If you look at the member states, we enabled the member states to act swiftly, for example, through the general escape clause, through the temporary state aid framework, and the complete flexibilization of the EU budget. And we enabled the European level to act forcefully and swiftly, at the beginning with SURE and now with Next Generation EU. And we will have a look at the G7 overall. Interestingly, if you take together the whole financial fiscal support in the European Union, if you look at the plans of what has been done in 2020, 21, and 22, there is an amount to fiscal support equivalent to 18% of GDP in Europe. And this is completely on par with the United States. If you look at the plans of the United States, that sum up to 20% of GDP fiscal support in 2020, 21, and 22. We will certainly discuss that topic. The second important factor why we come back better is that when the crisis hit, the European Union had just put in place its plans concerning our priorities, the European Green Deal, the digitization and resilience. And the crisis proved us right in the priorities we had set. Thus, our spending goes into investment for green and digital transition and into resilience. And the plan was there, the roadmap was there, and we could immediately act. But of course, we are also open economies, so our prosperity therefore will depend on our partners' response to the crisis. So I'm very much looking forward to the G7 confirming that there will be continued parallelism of our approaches, and particular in maintaining fiscal support. Now to the second topic, of course the G7 will also look at the risks and threats to the recovery by the international environment we have. And here 2 points stand out. First of all, the economic resilience. Domestically, there too, we have developed over the past month our tools to guard ourselves against risks. So to defend an open society, to have economic exchange, but not at any costs. For example, if you look at our tool of the 5G toolbox or the dual use exports controls, but also the FDI screening we have now in place, our proposal to block distortive foreign subsidies. And the second topic, of course, will be that we will guard the respect for our values. We want cooperation, we want a lively exchange, but on the basis of democratic values and on the basis of fundamental rights. And for that, too, we have developed over the last month our tools, for example, the Global Human Rights Sanctions Regime, or our forthcoming proposal for an anti-coercion instrument, and, of course, the whole tool set of human-centric approach to the digital world. You know it, it's the Digital Services Act, the Digital Markets Act, and the regulation on AI that is human-centered. We know that China and Russia are particular sources of concern in those areas, and therefore the G7 are finally again united and determined to protect and to promote our values. The next topic we will look at is the best way to defend our values and to promote our values, and that is to reinforce a strong and rules-based multilateralism. And with the return of the United States to a global arena, we are very much looking forward to the G7 backing effective action to strengthen multilateralism. We need effective WTO rules-making, including a G7 commitment to help reform the WTO and the entire rules-based system. And we also need to strengthen our G7 partnership with developing countries, for example, on connectivity, as we have already agreed, for example, with Japan and India. Here, too, coordination with G7 partners can help to maximize the benefits of our investments from an economic but also sustainability and political point of view. But even more important than the investments in infrastructure, they are important, but more important are also the investments in people. And here, let me have a look at the G7's emphasis on education for development. COVID has led to one of the worst education crises in history for children around the world. And we know that especially girls and young women are at risk because of the pandemic. Around 11 million girls from pre-primary to secondary school are at risk of not returning to school, with all the consequences behind that for their lives. And this is a bitter legacy of COVID, and we must join forces to secure the perspectives of young girls and women. And therefore, the European Union strongly subscribes to the objective of 40 million more girls in schools by 2026 and 20 million more girls reading by age 10 or end of primary school. And for that, we need sustainable financing. We have for that the Global Partnership for Education, and this should be underpinned by, as I said, sustainable financing. So I am glad to announce that the European Commission will increase its contribution by 32%. Last MFF, we contributed 68 million euro per year. That was over the period of 7 years then, 475 million. Now we will raise this contribution to 100 million per year. That is an overall of 700 million euro over the period of 7 years, our MFF. But we will also not forget the most urgent of necessity, and that is the fight against hunger. Here as well, the European Commission will step up to the plate by providing 250 million euro of new humanitarian funding targeting acute food insecurity in the Sahel, East Africa, Central African Republic, Sudan and Ethiopia. Turning towards the topic of health, we do subscribe the G7 aim to end the pandemic by 2022 by stepping up the global vaccination. The European Union has from the beginning contributed massively to this. You know the figures. Since vaccines became available, the European Union has acted. Not only that we at the very beginning with friends created ACT Accelerator and COVAX, but we pledged heavily for it. But we also have from the beginning ensured that the domestic vaccination goes hand in hand with exports to the rest of the world. And we have good news. Today in Europe, more than 50% of the adult population have received at least one shot. And even better, today 100 million Europeans are fully vaccinated. We achieved that whilst never stopping export. From the 700 million doses that have been produced in the European Union since last December, roughly 350 million doses have been exported to over 90 countries. And a few weeks ago, I invited others to also participate and practice openness, and I'm very glad to see that the draft communique reflects this now, and it is very encouraging to listen to the potential announcements of the United States. Beyond 2022, it is not just about sharing vaccines, but it will be also about developing manufacturing capacity in Africa. You know that Team Europe announced indeed 1 billion of support to develop manufacturing capacity in Africa. Here is important not only to bring the mRNA technology for vaccines against COVID to Africa, but also to bring this technology to Africa because it is very promising for other infectious disease, for example, like tuberculosis or, for example, malaria. So there's an enormous good case to make sure that there are different manufacturing hubs being developed in different regions of Africa. Finally, on climate, we committed to limit temperature increase to 1.5 degrees Celsius. I welcome that the G7 are also aiming in this direction, but I want to be very clear. Even a world that is just 1.5 degrees Celsius warmer than today will be much worse than today. And therefore, adaptation policies must be a central element of our climate policies in the European Union, but also, of course, with our partner countries. We acknowledge their specific needs. And in fact, the European Union already spends about half of its development finance on projects that support at the same time development and adaptation to climate change. But on top of this, as you know, we have this climate financing. So we support the G7 objective of $100 billion per year on climate financing. Team Europe has consistently contributed $25 billion over the last 3 years, and we will come up with a renewed commitment for Glasgow COP26 on that topic too. That was a lot. Thanks for your patience. We'll be right back.
A parte il G7 Summit, il relazionit bein il Regno Unit u l-Unjoni Ewropea kienu ukoll trattati fit-tul kif kien hemm għadd ta' negozjati li kienu għaddejjin ma' l-istess Unjoni Ewropea u f'dawn l-aħħar jiem il-sitwazzjoni kompli tiffoka b'mod partikolari fuq l-onorit li kien hemm onorati l-ftehim li ntlaħaq bejn iż-żewġ naħat, però wkoll kellek l-aspett partikolari li qed hum dwar is-sitwazzjoni ta' relazzjoni fuq l-Irlanda ta' fuq. Nisimgħu d-diskors li għamel Marco Sefcovic il-Kummissarju Ewropew dwar din il-relazzjoni u t-taħdidiet li kien hemm bejn iż-żewġ naħat.
So good afternoon and a warm welcome to Europe House to all of you. We had very important meetings today with the United Kingdom, and let me begin by thanking David Frost for hosting them both here in London. This is the first time the European Union and the United Kingdom met in the context of the Partnership Council under the Trade and Cooperation Agreement. And it was already the eighth meeting of the Joint Committee. And I will start with the Joint Committee, where we discussed two issues that are at the core of withdrawal agreement and are in fact the necessary foundation of any solid relationship between the EU and the UK. The implementation of the Protocol on Ireland, Northern Ireland, and the issue of citizens' rights. On the issue of citizens, the deadline of 30th of June for residence application by the EU citizens in the UK and the UK citizens in the EU is fast approaching. Our citizens must have legal certainty as to whether they are covered or not by the withdrawal agreement. We agreed to work together to ensure that this is the case. I also raised the very sensitive issue of the detention of EU citizens at the UK border. I sought reassurances from Lord Frost that all outstanding issues will be solved swiftly. Turning to the Protocol on Ireland, Northern Ireland, the EU repeated today its unwavering commitment to the Good Friday Belfast Agreement. For this, the protocol needs to be implemented. The UK agreed to the protocol as being the best solution. After 4 years of intensive negotiations to address the unique situation on the island of Ireland and the challenges created by Brexit and the UK's choice to leave the EU single market and customs union. The EU and the UK agreed that the protocol was the only way to protect the Good Friday Belfast Agreement in all its parts. Over the past years, the EU has engaged creatively and tirelessly to find solutions that would provide businesses and people in Northern Ireland with stability, minimize the inevitable disruption caused by Brexit, and protect the EU's single market and Ireland's place in it, the latter being unconditional. Lately, in December last year, we agreed to a range of solutions with the UK, including grace periods for certain products or flexibilities regarding documentation because the UK was not technically ready to implement the protocol for its entry into force. Since then, we continued working on permanent solutions where feasible. For example, on the continued supply of medicine to Northern Ireland, something I personally take very seriously, especially in this time of pandemic. And here we stand ready to go and amend our own laws to ensure the supply. I can also mention guide dogs, VAT on second-hand cars, or certain flexibility regarding the movement of livestock between Great Britain and Northern Ireland, or TRQ on steel, and many other examples. But we cannot undo the core of the protocol. The SPS controls have to be performed between GB and Northern Ireland, since this is a necessary condition to ensure the absence of controls between Northern Ireland and Ireland. This element has been discussed at length with the UK before agreeing on the protocol. And in this context, the EU agreed exceptionally to subcontract the controls of goods entering its single market to a third country, the United Kingdom. The UK has to abide by its legal obligations and perform these controls. Unfortunately, there are still numerous and fundamental gaps in the UK's implementation of our agreement. These gaps need to be filled by mutually agreed compliance path with concrete deadlines and milestones for the UK to fulfill its existing obligations. There is no other way around this. As you know, the name of protocol is the Protocol on Ireland and Northern Ireland. I saw some rumors in the press today about Ireland, and I want to clarify something. We have always shown solidarity with Ireland, and we will continue to stand by Ireland, which is the member state most affected by Brexit. This is a matter between the EU and the UK, not between the EU and Ireland. We have always said that the EU's objective is to preserve the Good Friday Belfast Agreement as well as the integrity of the single market, including Ireland's place in it. Today, I can say we are at the crossroads in our relationship with the UK. Trust, which should be at the heart of every partnership, needs to be restored. That is the EU approach and the EU preference. If the UK were to take further unilateral action over the coming weeks, the EU will not be shy in reacting swiftly, firmly, and resolutely to ensure that the UK abides by its international law obligations. Pacta sunt servanda. I will continue to speak regularly to businesses, civil society, and politicians in Northern Ireland to hear from them about their experience. I believe we all have a duty in Brussels, London, and Belfast to focus on politics that unites rather than divides. And I'm calling on the UK government to work together on this. And I'm positive we can find solutions. Where there is a will, there is always a way. On Partnership Council, the European Union and United Kingdom launched the work of the Partnership Council under the Trade and Cooperation Agreement today. As you all know, the full implementation of the withdrawal agreement is a prerequisite for a close, solid relationship based on trust. The implementation of the TCA will actually be equally, if not more important, than its negotiation. Therefore, I'm glad that we agreed today on an indicative timetable for the upcoming meetings of various joint committees established under this agreement. At the same time, I raised some of the issues that have arisen in recent months, notably fisheries, where we agreed that our experts would meet before August to ensure that the TCA is fully respected. We need stability for our fisheries sector under the new arrangements. We have already seen some problems around Jersey, and we don't want to see that repeated. Behind every license not issued by the UK is the fisherman or fisherwoman and their family and livelihoods. I also stated clearly that we will not accept discrimination between EU citizens on long-term visa fees. We have requested the UK to extend the visa fee reduction to the five member states currently excluded. Let there be no doubt, the EU wants to build a strategic, enduring, and mutually beneficial partnership with the United Kingdom. And the TCA is the basis for this partnership. Thank you.
Fillim li għaddew il-Kummissjoni Ewropea ħabret numru ta' deċiżjonijiet dwar ksur ta' ultimi regolamenti jew inkella nuqqas ta' adozzjoni ta' liġijiet minnaħa ta' Malta marbutin ma' qatt ta' aspetti. Fost l-oħrajn u l-iktar forsi wieħed li kien hemm aħbarijiet u ħoss dwarhom kien hemm dak relatat mal-beħ tal- passaporti fl-iskema ta' ċittadinanza b'investiment. Kien hemm ukoll aspetti li jikkonċernaw il-qasam ta' l-insib u oħrajn relatati mal-proċeduri għal permessi ta' residenza u oħra relatata mal-immaniġar ta' l-iskart. Il-Kummissjoni Ewropea fil-fatt ħabbret li se tieħu passi ulterjuri ta' proċedura minħabba ksur ta' regolamenti kontra kemm Ċipru u Malta rigward il-skemi ta' ċittadinanza b'investiment, magħrufin ukoll bħala il-passaporti ta' deheb. Il-Kummissjoni tikkonsidra li l-skemi kkonċernati u li joffru ċittadinanza għal ħlas jew investimenti Il-Stati membri kienu edin jonsu mill-li jonoraw l-obligi skont il-prinċipju ta' kooperazzjoni sinċera u definizzjoni ta' ċittadinanza Ewropea skont kif huma stabiliti fit-trattati ta' l-Unjoni Ewropea. Fil-waqt li l-iskemi li kienu taħt skrutinju preċedenti għadhomx attivi f'Malta, il-Kummissjoni tenniet li l-iskema proposta sa fl-aħħar tas-sena li għaddiet kienu hemm bżonn ukoll li jiġu indirizzati biex l-aspetti neċessari ikunu ukoll stabiliti u solvuti. Kien hemm ukoll ittri oħrajn ta' avviż formali lill-Litwanja u l-Slovenja kif ukoll it-tradizzjonali ta' notice formali lill-Malta li ma għamlux trasposizzjoni ta' regolamenti redati ma' residenti għalli għamlu żmien fit-tul. Il-Kummissjoni wkoll iddeċidiet li tipproponi li tibgħat opinjoni raġunata dwar il-fatt li Malta naqsi li titemenda il-liġijiet dwar it-tassazzjoni tal-karozzi u li toħloq element ta' diskriminazzjoni. Aspetti oħrajn kienu stabiliti marbutin mal-ksur redat mad-direttiva tal-għasafar fejn tidħol l-insib, kif ukoll in-nuqqas li tiġi wetqa fis-seħħ ir-regolamenti Ewropej dwar il-qasam tal-trattament tal-iskart fil-pajis. B'hekk niġu fit-tmiem l-edizzjoni ta' din il-ġimgħa tal-programm il-Balon bejn il-Jasmin Saliba nsemmilkom nawguralkom il-komplement tal-jum it-tajjeb.
Għadkom kemm smajtu il-Balomba, produzzjoni u prezentazzjoni ta' Jasmine Saliba. Il-programm li għadkom kemm smajtu kien miġjub lilkom bix-xewqa tajba ta' rappreżentanza tal-Kummissjoni Ewropea f'Malta.